Hello and welcome to Booktopia You're On. I am Bronwyn.
I'm Sarah.
I'm John.
And we are here with crime writer Sarah Bailey, who's just written her new book, Into the Night. Hi, Sarah.
Hello.
And we wanted to do a podcast here today just all about crime because we thought, got a crime offer here.
Any excuse to talk about crime fiction, I'll always jump on it.
This might be a bit confusing with two Sarahs, but we'll manage.
Sarah one.
You can refer to me as Sarah Jane.
Sarah Jane. We can do that, Sarah Jane. We've slipped into an Austin novel or something.
I think people can figure it out.
Yeah. So why don't we start with, this is a bold start, but what are some of your favourite crime reads of all time? New, old, doesn't matter, go.
Who's first?
Sarah Jane.
Sarah Jane's first. Well, I mean, the foremost in my head at the moment is Into the Night, which is literally the most recent crime novel I've read, and it was amazing. But honestly, like, there are sometimes characters really creep into your head and you really, like, you know, bond with them. Mm-hmm. And I think I'm with Gemma Woodstock for life now. Mm-hmm. So, like, if there are 20-something books in this series, I'm there. So that's the most recent and probably best crime novel I've read this year. Another close runner for best of recent times would be Candace Fox's latest Ted Concaffey and Amanda Parrell books. All of them, in fact, The Crimson Lake and Redemption Point. Really loved those. Obviously, The Dry. Really loved. I feel like I should call back to Golden Age crime for my other two choices.
Absolutely.
So, like, one of the first crime books I ever read, before I knew that I liked crime, was Strong Poison by Dorothy L. Sayers. So that's, like, that was like, wait a minute, I might like books about murder.
I'm trying to imagine a time when you weren't obsessed with crime.
It was there. I did
not know you before that.
I used
that
to
time.
Think, oh, crime, oh, that's boring, like dead people, whatever. Now I'm all over it.
And now if there is a murder in Booktopia, my first thought will be you.
No, I'll solve it.
Well, you'll either commit it or solve it.
Yeah. And then I probably also want to pick a Agatha Christie. So I'm going to go with, I really like Peril at End House. I'm going to say that's one of my faves. That's me done. That's okay. Five, right?
Can I count? I'm impressed you kept a five.
Yeah. Usually I could keep going, shall I?
Yeah. I haven't read as much crime as you guys. I only sort of started in the last few years thanks to this one here. Sarah has all these crime books on her desk and I would just sort of go and pick one and run away with it. But I've read, I really like The 50-50 by James Patterson and Candace Foss.
Oh my God, Harriet Blue. Oh.
I loved that. That was a really good one. And I read one, I think it was last year, called A Necessary Evil by Abir Mukherjee. And it was amazing. It was set in India, and it was a period piece, and it was just absolutely incredible. It felt like I was there. Really interesting crime. That one, you know, even that was one of the first ones I've read, and it still sticks with me today. I read a few months ago "Don't Believe It" by Charlie Donnelly.
Amazing. I really want to read that.
That ending, which I've said to Sarah many times, and I reviewed and everything, just I literally sat off. Like, no! So that was great. That was an amazing book. But I haven't read many others. Like, I mean, I've read a few others, but none that really, like,
I'll put together a reading
stick.
List for you.
Yeah, you do, though. She's always pitching me books. You have to read this. You have to read this.
It's like, good place to work for a reading list.
Good and bad.
You read the Drive, right?
I really like The Drive, absolutely.
Yeah.
John?
I got stuck on May Gray novels one holiday.
Ah.
They're all on the shelf, and they just gobble them down one after the other, and they're so sophisticated in Parisian high society. And, just sort of, I mean, he wrote so many books, 300 and something books, this guy. So I don't think there's any way of anyone putting together a list. Is it George Simenon? Is it something like that? May Gray.
Really disappointed when they made the show and everyone was English.
Yeah. It's got to be French. It has to be French. That was one of my first, when my head was turned. Mm. I enjoy Val McDermott, our good friend Michael Robotham. Joe Loughlin. And now that's another one with character, and it just drives through with that wonderful character.
And with Bat for Life as well.
And I have to confess, and I don't know why, I don't know, the Jack Reacher ones kind of put me into a place, and it's a relaxation place.
Entertaining.
And I can't stop.
You can pick up anyone and read it, and it will entertain you.
I remember Murakami writing something in the paper about his obsession with Jack Reacher, and he was so ashamed and delighted at the same time. And it's the kind of feeling I have.
You should never be ashamed.
No. So, yeah, they're probably more than five and all that, but they're the ones that I tend to go to.
Back to again, Mia. Sarah.
Okay. So one of the first books I read was The Godfather, which is crime. It's sort of, isn't what you would normally describe perhaps as crime.
When was that?
I was really young.
Wow.
Oh my goodness.
Is this what makes a crime author, like reading
The Godfather? I don't think my parents knew that I snuck it off the shelf, but I was obsessed with that book. I just thought it was insane. Like I cried so much when certain character dies, which I won't spoil in case anyone hasn't read it.
Me.
But just blew me away. So that was probably my favourite for quite a while. And then I did read all the Patricia Cornwell books pretty obsessively through my teenage years, which, like, I've actually gone back and reread some of the early ones, which they're really good.
Yeah.
And I still think that the way that she sort of brought the forensic stuff into the narrative was pretty clever and pretty compelling. Like, they're awesome stories and character as well. It's, you know, definitely develops amazingly well over the years. And Kate Atkinson is another one that I think is pretty consistently amazing and brutal. Like some of the openings to some of her books in the PI series are like, you kind of can't believe that someone's opened a book like that. You know, you're like, wow, that's pretty confronting. So I think she's even beyond a crime writer, she's just an amazing writer, but the crime element's very bit twisted and clever, so I like that. And one of the best books I've read in the last year is by Sarah Pinborough, a UK author, I believe, called Behind Her Eyes, which is like a psychological thriller that the sense of dread reading that book is so palpable and just strong and clever. And the ending is nuts. So
I've got to read that book. I just read her new one, Crossover.
Yeah, which I'm really looking forward to reading.
But I really liked it. Yeah, every time I mention it, people are like, Behind Her Eyes, Behind Her Eyes.
It's like an experience. Yeah, I mean, I didn't have any expectations and I'd never read anything else she'd written. But, it's nuts. The ending's crazy.
That's a great list.
Yeah.
That's a really good list.
Sarah's just thinking of all the ones that she didn't mention.
I was thinking, going, oh my god, I didn't put Michael Rebotham on the list. Like,
and it's like you're betraying them if you haven't mentioned them on air. There's many more that she loves, everyone. It's fine.
We'll just have a podcast where she just lists all the authors. It's
that
just,
will go for hours.
Yeah, just you reading all the authors.
12-hour podcast, anyone?
Funny. So, I mean, obviously, for people who started really young, something that hooked you guys with crime, what is it, do we think, that people love about crime? I mean, it's horror. It's the horrible things that are happening to people, and we're enjoying it.
But it's a problem, right?
It's a problem to be solved.
Yeah.
So I think there's the puzzling element of it, like where you want to solve it yourself.
Mm-hmm.
There's the suspense element because there's danger.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, like, why do we like any kind of story? Like, I think you go into crime because you want to solve a problem and you want to kind of feel a sense of suspense.
Is it because generally, for the most part, we know that the bad guy's going to get caught, that the good guys are going to stick it to him? And that's a very satisfying thing that, you know, there might be a bit of suffering, but then we will get that justice at the end. We want that satisfaction. Is that maybe why?
Yeah, there's that. There's a righting wrongs and stuff. Mm. Like, I think it just appeals to, I don't know, we're all going to die. I would like to think that if I died before my time, someone would solve murder. Like, I don't know. It's a really good question.
It's like cleaning up. It's like, someone's left a mess. Let's clean that up. I need to get that.
And John, there's a great satisfaction at the end. John answer. Oh, someone's been murdered. What a mess.
Well, I'm listening to the Sherlock Holmes, the full Sherlock Holmes in the car on the way to work, and they're quite short. You know, there's millions of one after the other, and every time they leave the apartment, and he tells Watson to make sure he brings his revolver, and you're like, come on. And the amount of ejaculation that's in that book is ridiculous. But, you know, they're simple little puzzles, and you try to outwit Holmes every time you're listening to it. You listen just like all the information that he gets, you listen to too.
Have you ever outwitted Holmes?
No, I've gone down the same path.
Something that you can't know. Like, he knows everything. When he sees a thing, like, unless you're an expert
my mum, not necessarily Sherlock Holmes, but my mum, I swear, she should write, because she calls it every time we watch something that needs to be solved. She's like, oh, this happened. And I'm like, stop doing that, because you're probably right, and you spoiled it.
You know what some of that is? The whole way through, I'm guessing.
You know, it was really interesting. When I was living in Italy and I didn't know Italian, I was with a family and I was watching Matlock and MacGyver and all these different shows on there in Italian. And I hadn't seen them, because why would I? And
Colombo?
Colombo. And because I wasn't listening to what they were saying, I was just watching all the behaviour. I would just go, he did it. And they'd be right. But the language got in the way.
Yeah.
All the different bad acting was enough for me. Yeah, the guilt was going on.
Like, I do think there's a bit of a rhythm to crime as well. Mm. Like, it's sort of what you were saying about the problem solving. I can't remember, I think it was someone I've spoken to recently said that they've done some studies and there is actually some types of human brain that is more sort of interested in that problem solving kind of task that a crime book sets. And so it's actually some people, like, they're drawn to math or science or whatever. It's like people are drawn to problem is laid out, you solve problem resolution, and it's sort of like a satisfying, like a task.
Yeah.
So that is a bit boring, but it kind of makes sense.
No, that's not boring. I get that. That's very interesting.
So that also helps with the division of all the different crime. So there's a crime mystery, and there's a crime thriller.
Sometimes you know who it is the whole way through as well, and it's about catching them.
Yeah, just please get
the cat and mouse thing I find really interesting, like that TV show The Fall.
Yeah, I was just thinking about it.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of, in a way, like, I quite liked it, but then I found it hard to work out why I liked it, because in a way it's all just sort of suspense, because there's no puzzle. You sort of, I guess, want to know what's going to happen, but you certainly don't need to know who done it.
To you get drawn in by the characters, and then you want to see it all play out. You
such a power play.
I mean,
and the lines the lines that are in that are brilliant. Some of the lines she gets to say.
You're right, it's character driven, and you sort of really you really sort of invest in them, I guess, as opposed to the sort of whodunit or what's going to happen next type thing. It's a different structure, but and true crime, I think, is totally different again. I listen to a lot of true crime. I don't read a lot of it, but I think that true crime really throws up that problem around getting justice, because so often it doesn't end up being a happy ending. But so I think you read that almost as a cautionary tale and a bit of a what would I do in that circumstance versus I want to read this and feel kind of like it comes full circle and I can go out and be like, yeah, that was all solved. So that's really, I think they're really different. Yeah.
I think with true crime, you're kind of like, I always feel like I'm arming myself against danger just by knowing the kinds of terrible things that could happen.
I think that's why a lot of women read true crime. I reckon there's almost like a psychological kind of protection thing going on, where you sort of like, I want to know what I would do in that circumstance and avoid it.
And what worked and what did not work.
Yeah.
What did you think about the Golden State Killer getting caught?
So I haven't read the book yet, but I'm really keen to read it. And I just think it's really interesting. Like, I know the same, it's different, but similar sort of story with Serial, now that the main culprit,
Adnan?
The accused, Adnan,
is
going to trial in the US. And that's sort of based on this podcast that's kicked off this entire cold case investigation. Like, it's crazy.
It's very interesting. I mean, I did read I'll Be Gone in the Dark before and again after they caught the guy, and it was such a different experience reading it after.
Yes, resolution, like, different.
Yeah, because you just feel like there was a sense the whole time reading, you're like, oh, I know, but it's okay.
They'll get him.
Whereas the first time it was just like, it's terrible.
So sad.
Never
been that's definitely interesting.
What do you think about the with so much true crime going on, and when you get involved true crime, you see how slow and ordinary everything is, and how often cases might be passed on to someone else instead of the same hero going right through the whole thing. All these kind of things. When that, I really love when that falls into novels. I love it when this ordinariness falls into in yes. those spaces, and that the things that catch people are not really, really tricky, but quite basic things, and people overthink. I'm trying to jump ahead and overthinking what's going on, but in fact, you know, in life, people get done by the silliest things.
Well, I think there's a line in the book that I've written about that somewhere. There's so much luck. Yeah. Not that I think a lot of detectives and police officers would love to talk about it when they're sort of in their careers, but I think once they've retired, they're often quite happy to say, you know, gosh, you can only do so much. There's only so many hours in a day, and sometimes it's not the evidence that's in front of you. It's linking that to something else that you can't see because you don't know. It doesn't exist in your world. It's like what you were saying about Sherlock Holmes. Like, yeah. If you can't see it and you don't know it exists, you can't link it together. So I think cold cases are so interesting because they're done. They're in this box that's sort of labelled sad, and maybe one day something might happen. And then I guess it's just sometimes there is something that will just, like, thread it all together.
Especially when there's that one person who stuffs it all into their one head.
So, like, yeah.
To make those connections, like you said, you know, if you don't know it all, you'll never make the connection to the thing you don't know. But if you're the person who sits there cramming it all in and obsessing, you know, and I don't know what kind of life that is, but then you might be the one.
Yeah, you're the only one that has the perspective to see how that might fit with that. You know, yeah. It's fascinating, like...
And I mean, then it might take an accident.
Yeah, and you can't computerize that stuff in a way because, you know, you can't...
It's creative.
You can't see links that aren't sort of obvious. So, it's kind of interesting, I think.
That that growth and understanding of how humans behave, you know, that I love as well with detectives who kind of are educating us as we read.
Yes.
About you know, and no, they wouldn't do that because... You know, this is how a person behaves in such a circumstance.
Yeah. The profiling sort of stuff's like so interesting. I don't know if you guys have seen that Mindhunter show.
Oh my God, yes.
But I mean, and it's obviously like the history of profiling, so it's right back at the start, but makes so much sense. But then it is still such guesswork, so I don't know, it's cool.
And it's so new. When you realise that this was all just starting to become a proper accepted science in the 70s.
A few years ago,
Like, what are we going to know in 40 years? Like, another 50 years, what will happen?
Yeah, it is interesting. And even, just the whole concept of cause and effect. And it's coming up now in some of the school shootings and stuff in America, and it's sort of, I don't know, sometimes it doesn't help to know why someone has done something, but I guess it's always better to know than to not know. So there's so much psychology in crime, which I think is what people really find interesting as well.
What do you think about modernity? So, like, when I'm listening to Sherlock Holmes, the fastest thing going is a telegram. And the communication between things and the timing has to be right. Well, in modern times, someone could text and ring, find out exactly where they are. All these things which really annoy writers. Because drama is made from people not seeing each other or not getting that message.
I know, I do feel like I've said this before, but I think, you know, Agatha Christie had it pretty easy in some ways because letters and lovely mansions and telegrams and whatever, you know, it does. There's such a romance to the timing of it, and sort of a, I don't know, it's quite cool, like that layer of sort of everything being done in this perfectly plotted out timeline that makes sense, but it's also the suspense sometimes was based on the reality of something not being able to happen earlier than that.
Yeah.
And then I think these days I haven't found it too bad for me so far, but I do know a lot of people who are looking at setting books back a few decades or at least before smartphones because it really, even just that ability to always track where someone is often ruins a whole lot of how you would potentially create suspense around someone disappearing.
Murderers
have it really tough.
Really hard.
There's a couple of novels when that started to happen, and they had to lose the phone, or there was some of this. But I was watching the Killing. It's The Killing, right? And the phone is one of the main characters.
Yes.
They're flip phones. They're constantly on the phone.
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of, they made it integral to the show.
And I think you can do that. You can. I mean, technology can kind of be part of the sort of idea. And it does help other things. Like, it helps secret relationships occur a lot more easily, I suppose, and you can link people together that wouldn't have otherwise been linked. So often it can be a plot point, is that, oh, that person's called that person, so hang on a minute, they knew each other. So, like, I think it's sort of, you just use it however you can. But, yeah, it does restrict you, I think, a little bit in terms of you have to cross so many more T's and dot so many more I's because you kind of have to go, oh, hang on a minute. They would have just been able to look that up. Well, they know where she is because their phone's there. So,
now street cameras in all the cities.
CCTV. So much CCTV.
You've got to create someone that has a motive hidden enough they're not suspected. So they're not looking at their phone records.
And I also do think, like, people are still doing awful things. So people in the real world are working out ways around technology, as they always have.
The criminals get smarter.
They get smarter. The cops have to get smarter. There's also, you know, talk now about people forging DNA and planting DNA, and because the courts have become so lazy with, as long as DNA evidence backs it up, then the trial is pretty secure, people now can be put away completely wrongfully because, well, they had half of their hair there. So, you know, like, it's scary. You can kind of almost twist it so that technology is actually
working for
us down. So, you know, there's ways you can trick it around it.
Although I think in the two recent shows I've seen, they've had the bad guy use the phone to convey that the person was still alive a long period enough to get out, to get away.
In a way, anything that's going to make it more complicated is kind of good for you when you're...
Yeah.
Not when you're a criminal, like when you're...
when you're a crime writer.
For crime writers.
Yeah.
Said the crime expert.
Yeah, you just have to be able to add it all up. And I guess you have to balance people kind of eye-rolling and going, this is just off the charts ridiculous, with, oh, yeah, this has got me interested enough that I'm trying to figure out how the hell this is all going to come together. So it's, I guess, making sure you strike the right balance in that.
Yeah. What's really interesting when listening to Sherlock Holmes is, I'm so used to wonderful character development, richness and continuity and the rest of it, and there's none.
That's what I find when I read Sherlock Holmes. I'm like, okay, it's great, but there's no psychology. Like, there's no. It's just all about him catching the because of his encyclopedic knowledge of stuff. Like, it's a great idea, and I love the stories, and they're cool. But you're right that there's no meat to the characters.
When they do new versions of it, they give much more meat to the characters, it's not that new anymore. But that's
the Sherlock show has added so much to the Sherlock Holmes mythology.
It's just not there in the book.
Yeah,
it doesn't exist. It's empty. It's
quite one-dimensional. Yeah.
Yeah, but we get such richness in character development now, and in all the crime novels. I mean, there's barely any that are as thin on the ground.
But people have taken that character and run with it because it was a new thing when he did it. And, and it's lasted all this time and had so many reiterations because it's an archetype that people love.
Yes.
And we kind of fill in the gaps with, and other writers are filling in the gaps.
Yeah, like he's become more and more of a drug addict as time has gone on. I don't know, maybe that's not true. Does he take a lot of opiates?
In the first part they mention it, and as it goes on, they don't mention it much anymore.
So it's in there.
It's definitely in there.
But some people have made more of it in the retellings.
And it's more interesting.
Yeah, so, but yeah, I mean, what about tropes? I mean, because people do rely on, like, the drunk cop.
I love them all.
Yeah, what are your favourite or your least favourite?
I think it's only bad when people are lazy about it, right? Yeah. Like, they're there for a reason. I think it's a playing field that you've got, and you've just got to play well. Mm. That's my thoughts on it.
Yeah, I mean, stereotypes are always think it's funny when people criticise tropes or stereotypes because they're familiar, and so people can relax into a story if they get a sort of an understanding of a character quite quickly, and I don't think it's a bad thing. But I think you obviously in any book, it doesn't even matter what genre, you sort of find the conventions and then work out which one of them you're going to kind of carefully crack. So you want it to be familiar enough that people understand the narrative and the story and they can follow what's going on, but they want something in it that's making it distinctive. So, I think you've got to try and break one or two of the conventions, but you are writing in a genre that there's expectations around, so you sort of have to honour those too.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I love, like, all the kinds of crazy sort of tropes. I think Joe Nesbo does some really good ones. I think Michael Robotham is really interesting. Like, I think his character of Joe is really interesting for that reason, because he's not perfect, but he's likable, but he makes some poor decisions. Like, it's kind of a bit of a mixed bag.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that he's a dad, I think, is quite interesting, because often they're not parents, because they can be much more irresponsible, but he has to juggle that. So, yeah, I don't know. I think they're all sort of part of the
Do you think you've got chemistry. More scope with a female main character, because there hasn't been as many female main characters? There are more things to do, more new things to actually work with?
I don't know. I think there is a bit more judgment. I mean, I'm not. I say that not having written male characters, but I do think that people are a little bit more likely to sort of have an emotional response to her behaviour. Like, I get some strange sort of emails and reviews that are quite sort of emotive, and seem to be quite sort of like personal, which I think is more of like a bit of a societal kind of thing, where they kind of don't think women should be behaving in a certain way, and they kind of bring that out in the character. But I like it. I think it's interesting because that juggle of all those roles is so, they're so at odds. Mm. Like, a homicide detective who's trying to, who's quite ambitious, who's a daughter and a partner and a mother, and, you know, might have more children or might not want to or whatever. I think there's a lot going on before she even gets to work.
Yeah.
So I kind of think that's really interesting.
Mm.
And I think that everyone who I've ever met that isn't a detective or, you know, a police officer, it is quite selfish. Like, you have to sort of be able to put your head into that space. So I guess it doesn't fit that traditional mother archetype particularly well.
Do you think it has anything like the because the being a writer can also, you know, you're on a case. You're writing a book.
Yeah.
Your mind's only with that book. and people see it.
Yep.
Your close loved ones see it when you're not looking at them and you're listening to them.
Yeah.
You're writing the next chapter.
Yeah. I've often joked that, I mean, I'm not a detective at all. Like, I worked in advertising, so it's got nothing to do with homicide, really. I'm not yet. Maybe in the future I'll write something. But, I often would sort of feel like, you know, Gemma's sitting there trying to solve the case and I'm sitting in my bedroom wall going, can't bloody work out this case. Like, it's kind of, you are in the same headspace when you're trying to write a murder storyline and then the person is trying to solve it. But, I mean, it's a lot more flexible than working a homicide, I think, writing.
Yeah.
You can fit it around after cooking dinner and stuff. So. It's not that tricky. similar struggle, but, yeah.
I was just wondering as well, you know, speaking of detectives and stuff, do you have a favourite fictional detective of all time?
Just one?
Come on, Sarah.
I can't do one.
Pick one you love.
It's impossible to do
one.
Was
it your first love?
Well, my first love, I guess, would be that Lord Peter Wimsey from Strong Poison. That was like, oh, wow.
He's so cool.
He's quirky and little weird Sarah. And unexpected and, you know... Yeah, I guess. But, like, there's so many. There's so many great ones. I think there's, and especially at the moment, currently, there's so many interesting characters to really love. Like, Aaron Falk. It's, like, cool to be in that world. Like, I've already waxed lyrical about my Gemma Woodstock. I just like a detective who's, I think if I fall off somewhere, it's when you've just got your really, like, dogged detective who doesn't have much going on in their personal life and is removed. Like, they're just there in a crime-solving capacity. I can't actually think of an example. I tend not to read very many of them. I do lean towards... Like, I love the Inspector Linley books because he's got so much, like, going on in his personal life. I can't pick one.
Sorry, you gave us a type.
Yeah, so, I like a character. I like when characters have lives. I tend to swing dark, so I like it when things are a bit dark. So I guess if I like a trope of a detective, I do like the kind of damaged ones.
Struggling so much. This was your question.
I know. I was thinking about.
She's like,
Sarah.
We should ask this.
I was like, let's ask Sarah what her favorite one is. I didn't know Sarah. I would have to answer.
Yeah,
it's too hard.
This is a forum.
I say no comment, and okay. Then now you're, who's your favorite?
Uh,
Well, I was just thinking a book I should have said before that I loved was In the Woods by Tana French, which I think I read like when I was quite young as well when it first came out. And I did love the detective in that. I think his name's Rob Ryan. And I, similar to you though, it was because I think he had this backstory link to the case. Mm. But his relationship with his partner was so well kind of woven and drawn. I just thought that was such an amazing book. So that was probably that's one of my favourite detective characters. But she didn't sort of go on to continue him. So it was sort of, he was in a bit of a one hit only. But I also love Law and Order, Olivia Benson. She's a bit of a favourite of mine. I know it's not a book.
That's okay. We're still going to have crime.
But I think it's been really interesting the way they've had to go from her being a bit more one dimensional at the start, where it was kind of very case driven. And then I think maybe as the appetite in the sort of society has kind of wanted more character driven detectives, they've really brought her backstory to the fore. So I don't know if there's sort of viewer feedback or whatever, but you know, it's been 20 years. Like, it's a pretty amazing character development. So yeah, I think she's pretty cool.
Mm-hmm. John?
Well, I'd go Maigret for me. I just like that development. I mean, he's not developed as some of the more modern characters are, mm-hmm. but there's, I think the author just relies on us knowing. There's a sort of a knowingness about the writing that is assumed. If you're amongst this circle, then you'll know what we're talking about.
Which is quite cool.
Yeah, so I like that. I forgot to mention before, one of the most amazing bits of crime writing that I've ever read, and it isn't normally listed as a crime novel, but is An American Tragedy by Theodore Dreiser, that is just extraordinary, photographic in its detail. The other one would be in that realm would be Crime and Punishment. I love that. And I love the way that he's able to bring the universal in it. So right at the beginning, when the whole thing is about, the first thing that happens is this guy decides that he's like Napoleon, and he would be able to do wonderful things like Napoleon if only he had a bit of cash. And the landlady down the road, the pawnbroker down the road, is just a pawnbroker. She's old anyway. If I knocked her on the head and took all her money, then I would get a start and I'd be the next Napoleon.
It's a slippery slope.
Yeah, it's just a simple thing to do. I'll organise it. And
it's all for the greater good.
He organises it, he works it all out, and he goes down there. And then when he raises the axe, his arm doesn't do it. And so he brings it down really soft because he's too frightened, and I don't know if you've ever been in one of those moments where you have been in a violent circumstance or someone's had, and you lose all your power. Mm. And you think you're going, like in dreams, when you want to run away and you can't. there are sometimes when violence comes from absolutely nowhere, and you just lose the power to do anything for a bit. And his arm just comes down soft on her head, and the axe just falls and just bonks. Doesn't really do much to her at all. And then he has to sort of get now he's done it. But hasn't done it, and she's still standing there looking at him going, what the hell are you doing? He has to go through it, and that's right in the first 10-15 pages of it. But that sense of what it is to do such a big deed just had me.
Yeah.
And then, you know, the rest of the book is all about how, if he can get away with it.
It's a cool premise.
Yeah, oh, good. Yeah, wonderful book.
I read it when I was way too young, I feel, to read it, because I was like, oh, that was a nightmare. Like, I got to the end of that book and I was like, never again. But now I think maybe I should reread it.
A bit too epic. Sometimes things can be a bit too epic for me a little.
Yeah.
I was just like, oh my God, just die. Like,
but the cleverness of the cop, the way in which the cop understands the criminal, the mind of the criminal in that is just, I mean, I can't fault it. They're just spot
and
on.
That's what it's all about.
So interesting.
To return to your question of why people like to read crime fiction, I really feel even when you've got a really clever plot that no one could ever guess the ending to, if it's not backed up by that psychology, I think that's what we're drawn to.
Yeah,
like the darkness that causes people to do these terrible things and the type of people who have to find them and bring them to justice.
Yeah. And especially when it's, you know, not someone who is, you know, a psychopath or someone who just...
When it's understandable, it's
You know, someone caught in a bad moment and makes a mistake. And
that's why I got so wrapped up in... I went through a stage as well when I started on Agatha Christie. I just ploughed my way through all of them. Because I think previous to reading any crime, I just sort of thought, oh, someone dies and then the detective finds them at the end. Like, there didn't seem to be much there for me to... But then when I realised that these... In Agatha Christie, you know, there's, you never even see the body. It's just, like, it sort of happens. And it's then,
incidental almost.
Yeah, and then the whole thing is characters, and it's all like, why did this person do it? And it eventually comes around. There's no cigarette ash. It just is usually about finding out the person who has the secret that caused them to do the thing. And I don't know. I'm rambling. I had an original point.
Yeah, the darkness. It's the fascination. Like, I think everyone's like, I mean, we all have free will, so there's, I'm not saying this in a scary way, but like everyone's kind of capable of killing somebody.
Absolutely. With the right motivation.
Yeah, but most people don't. So I think it's always the majority of the population sort of fascinated by these people that did get pushed over the edge. So they're kind of like, what tipped someone over?
And you wonder if maybe would that have tipped me?
Yeah. I think you're trying to understand it. You're trying to understand it. Yeah, exactly. And whether it's protective or cautionary or just sort of like pure fascination, I guess it's just interesting to sort of explore it.
Yeah.
That's a good note to end on, I think. Good chat, everyone. Thanks for joining us. And thank you so much, Sarah. And we're very excited for your book.
Thank you.
I haven't read it yet, but I'm very excited. Sarah was raving to me this morning about how much I love Gemma.
And everyone should go read Sarah's review of Sarah's book.
Yes,
Sarah's
please read Sarah's.
Just read the Dark Lake, everyone, and then review. Into the night.
Well, thanks for joining us, everyone, and we'll catch you next Wednesday at 11 a.m.
Thanks for listening to the Booktopia podcast. Don't forget to subscribe to us on SoundCloud and iTunes. And if your eyeballs need a workout, check us out on YouTube at Booktopia TV. And don't forget, for all books featured on this episode and all episodes of the Booktopia podcast, head to Booktopia, Australia's local bookstore, at www.booktopia.com.au. Thanks for listening.